my darlings. Welcome back to another edition of Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? I am your host, El Ariel, and we can be found at musicjobspodcast.com. That's musicjobs with an S, podcast.com. We're also on the streaming platforms Google Play, iTunes, Stitcher, Podcasts, iHeartRadio, TuneIn, and more. If you are listening to us on one of those streaming platforms, give us some stars, give us some love, give us some feedback, tell us what you really think, just so that we know how you feel, and also we can get this podcast to more people out there looking for a career in music, because again, we talk to the movers and shakers and innovators from all aspects of the music biz, talking to them about their career trajectories and how exactly they got their music jobs, what obstacles did they face, what decisions did they make, how did they get to where they are today. And this is being recorded the day after the Oscars, so some of you may have heard Lady Gaga's acceptance speech for Best Original Song, and she said, if you're sitting on your couch, you know, this takes a lot of hard work, and there is discipline in the passion, or passion in the discipline. But at any rate, I think the message was, you have to work your ass off, you have to hustle, you really, really have to give that blood, sweat, and tears to give it all you got to make a really successful career in the music biz. My guest last week was no exception, John McLucas. He is the ultimate hustler. He went from being a really good drummer and touring with really good bands that, you know, signed by labels, and touring with Tool and Primus, but making no money and really struggling, to deciding that, you know what, he's going to start his own business. He wants to open his own studio, and he really takes you through exactly how he did that, how he markets himself, how he brands himself. So just really good nuggets. And this week's guest, John Del Vento, is another man who knows how to hustle, who knows all about the blood, sweat, and tears, who knows how hard you have to work to make a really successful career in the music business. He is a composer. He is a euphonium player. He has an incredible resume of TV shows and documentaries and award-winning films that he has composed for under his belt. And he's really going to take you through step by step of how he does this. How is he able to live outside of New York and LA and still make a phenomenal career of being a composer for film and TV and for commercials, and how to make that money and how to be disciplined and everything you need to do. But before we do that, I'm talking too much. We need to let this man start talking. But before we do that, we are going to play a track of John's. It's called Lullaby of the Soul. Here we go. John, welcome to Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job?
Hey, how's it going?
Good.
Ariel.
Thank you for being here. I'm going to start with my first question. I always ask, tell me about your first memories of music.
Oh, wow. I should. maybe I'll have to email you the picture. I think there's a picture when I was 3 years old. I think it was three or two, with me with like a little toy guitar on the bed, and I was just strumming away. My mom always told me I was like a musical kid, and we weren't really a musical family. We sang in church and all that stuff, but I would always grab the pots and the pans and make the beats. And I'm not trying to like make up a story like it's the cliche, but it is the truth that, I mean, I was just a musical kid with the forks and the whistles, and I got a violin when I was like four, and I taught myself. So, you know, luckily growing up where I did, I had a, you know, good public school music education. So those early experiences turned into, you know, basically when you get in kindergarten, you're singing and playing instruments. So, you know, basically from then until now, music's been a part of my life. But the first memory, I want to say 3 years old, I was playing the guitar. But even before then, you know, I was listening to grandma sing in church, those awesome, you know, blues and lines and those great four-part harmonies. So, yeah, that would maybe be my earliest memory of music. But there's a great scientist that says the first sound that a baby experiences is the crying, you know, is the sound of the world. So maybe we could say that.
Yeah, right on. I like that.
Sound design. Sample it, Mom.
I was going to say, I'm sure it hits some sort of note, you know.
I'm sure. Hey, dissonance works, man. Why not?
Right.
I got an idea. I'm going to sample some babies. This is perfect.
Okay. So what did you have siblings that were doing music or anything like that? You said it wasn't, your parents weren't really doing music.
Yeah. So, I mean, I've had a, you know, kind of a little bit of a interesting, I mean, you know, kind of a, you know, tough-ish life. You know, my parents split up and stuff like that, so I didn't have any brothers and all that stuff. So home life was a little tough, so I was a little kind of independent kid, so I didn't have a lot of brothers and sisters and stuff. I got lost in the music and stuff. So, I mean, in terms of influences, really, for family, kind of zero. I mean, the only thing they did, which is I'm so grateful, is they supported me, is when I, you know, they helped me rent the instruments and stuff in school, and they always let me practice late at night and drove me around to different concerts. So that's what they did. But in terms of direct influences, I really didn't get any from them. They, you know, they all have their own skills. You know, dad's an archer and all this stuff, and mom can do basically anything, fly planes and stuff, but I'm the musician. It's just how it worked out. It's really cool. And I think it works out well because the conversations can be a little more generic.
Now, did you take lessons, or was everything just through the school?
Oh yeah, no, I'm a very classically trained person. I mean, as a, then we could talk about that. I mean, I left the classical world to do the film and TV, which I'm doing now, and I'm so fucking grateful I did that, because if I was sticking in classical, I'd probably be at, you know, working at the Panera Bread right now on the side or something. So no, but I started with classical. I mean, my parents were, or my grandma did say I should take lessons. That's one. I mean, she was very big on, you know, that every kid should have piano lessons and stuff. So I took lessons, and, you know, when you start in the public school, you know, from the Northeast U.S. where I'm from, you basically get your first instrument like third grade, fourth grade. The school provides it and everything, and you basically get free lessons. And, you know, we couldn't afford private lessons, so most of what I did was in the public school, and I just practiced my ass off every day. You know, I didn't have cell phone. I mean, we didn't have these stupid phones and stuff, so I would go home and play some basketball and just practice for a couple hours. I tell the kids nowadays to practice 2 hours. They look at me like I'm crazy. But, like, I would just practice a lot, and it's just working and hustling. That's really what it was. But, you know, I still had a good education and went to conservatory and stuff. But I wouldn't credit a lot of that to some of the business savviness. I think that's just kind of hard knocks stuff. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that answers it. And if I'm rambling, let me know. I tend to ramble.
No.
I'm a lonely composer.
No, it's all good. I like it. And I wanted to ask, though, about the classical training, because I think it's funny. I keep going back and forth. I was classically trained myself, and the result of that, it was in piano and eventually voice, but the result of that was that I became so intimidated that the thought of songwriting or composing was just like anathema to me. I couldn't fathom it after working with the masters, you know?
Yeah, you overthink everything. I mean, they make you overthink every note. They make you, I mean, for you, they probably had you shape every vowel and every millisecond and, you know, do every little vibrato. And yeah, I mean, that stuff's good. And the people that collaborate with me notice how picky I am. I'm very picky. I have very high standards, and I have a very good ear for knowing what's good and what sounds good and what doesn't. I think that comes from years of lessons and years of very tough teachers. And you know how classical is. I mean, every week you're in a room for 1 hour with your teacher, and they're just tearing you apart for the whole hour. You might get one, or at least in my perspective, I mean, some teachers are nice, but I had these tough classical teachers that would just tear you apart every week and just criticize every note. And it helped. I mean, because these lessons I used to have with these class, and I'm sure you know too, I don't know if you had, you know, old school classical teachers or stuff, but some of them can really, really get you. And sometimes I wanted to quit and stuff, but the one thing that those lessons did was adopt a certain standard, you know, a certain pickiness that has really helped me. But yeah, overall, I think it really makes you overthink and, you know, kind of limit your repertoire and stuff. And so I'm just glad in my last couple years in the conservatory, I moved towards, you know, pop music and producing beats and scores and stuff. So yeah, I'm never going to bash the training, because it's a very expensive training. It's a very old training, and it's a very, you know, it's just good to know how to read music and arrange things. But certain things you have to just kind of know, you know, you have to have some business savvy, which you're not going to learn in school.
So. Yeah. And I want to get to that. But yeah, it is interesting. And I like I say, I sort of go back and forth, because now I actually had an interview with another person who was a classical pianist, started out as a classical pianist. And we were talking about, you know, the parallels between math and music and that sort of sphere of your brain that you are actually utilizing. And, you know, so there is sort of this it, as much as it definitely has its disadvantages, I think that there's, again, I think to put it like simply, I think there were spheres in my brain that thankfully were lighting up that would not have otherwise.
Oh, absolutely.
Due to classical music. You know what I mean?
That's a great answer, actually. That's a really great answer. And, you know, and everything we're talking about is not the be all end all. Everyone has perspectives. So, you know, and I think every musician learns from every type of music. It's just kind of cool.
Yeah, absolutely. But I'm interested in your mindset because, again, it's not that typical that you had this drive, even though you didn't really have a parent or a teacher or somebody that was like really pushing you. You had this inner drive. Where did that come from? Like, you know, not a normal kid doesn't want to practice 2 hours a day without.
Well, and that's the thing. I mean, that's the secret sauce. And I still play my instrument around. And we had a little concert last night where they have, you know, half professional. It's this local symphony, and they have half professionals and half high schoolers do the concert. And at the end of the night, all the, you know, I haven't been practicing a lot, but I guess I sounded okay. The kids were coming up. Oh, how'd you do this and that? You sound great. And I'm just like, guys, you got practice. I mean, and I told the kid, like I just said a couple minutes ago, 2 hours a day. You know, I said, you know, put your phone down, leave your phone with your mom or your dad, leave it downstairs and go up and get a timer and some, and when you play, put the timer on and track it. When you take a break, took the timer off, and you should have at least 2 hours every day. And I say these things, and they just—it's not part of their vernacular. This generation maybe just doesn't have the sense of hours. And there's not a lot of fields outside of music where kids are starting it so young. I mean, maybe sports. Sports, you have to start young, and you're always playing, and you're always practicing. But music, you kind of have to start young, and you have to give the time. It's just part of the job. If you want to be a doctor, you can major in whatever the hell you want as undergrad, and you could be a doctor when you're 25 and you'll make a great, but if you want to be a successful musician, I mean, you have to take those lessons, and you have to have the drive. And if you don't do it, you're not going to make it. I mean, you're just not going to make it. And if you blame the world for not making it, it's not going to happen. So if you want to be a musician in your high school and you're listening, then just like, don't go to the parties because high school doesn't matter. You'll stick with your friend. Just practice and get good at a craft. And you might be a loner. You might get made fun of for now, but when you're on YouTube in a couple of years and your friends are working at McDonald's and you're making money and stuff, it's going to matter more. So for me, and I think the American culture tends to embrace this, I would say start young, work hard, because you're probably living at home. You don't have to pay bills. So use that time to learn something. And, you know, you don't have to choose your career when you're 11 or 12. But I just think it's a good habit to dedicate yourself to something at a young age. And I don't want to discourage older people from learning it. But, you know, if you're trying to do a lot of these business savvy things I keep mentioning, when you're, you know, having a family and you're having monthly bills come in, it's kind of tough. So when you're in college or at a young age and you could, you know, hone these musical skills, I think it's incredibly beneficial. But I can't give an answer because that's just a lot of the secret sauce. That's just something about me that has always worked, and it's just hard to explain. Maybe I can be a little abrasive sometimes with it, but it's something about successful people. It's not hard work, and it's not how you were born. It's not how much money. It's every research shows that it's grit, and that's my whole theory of life is grit. And everybody, if they need a one word answer, is grit. Is the big thing is grit. So hopefully that answered it. But it's just a tough question because that's like one of my things is being able to sit maybe for 8 hours a day and send demos. I mean, that's just something you got to do if you're trying to be a freelancer. And if you want to hang out at the parties and be the cool, you know, jock in high school, that's fine. If you want to, you know, major in college and party on the weekend and, you know, hang out, you know, and you know, waste your parents' money, that's fine. But if you want to do something and maybe you're in your early 20s or your early 30s and you want to, you know, start a business, then just go for it. You know, you'll have time to go to have, you know, fancy restaurants and cool dinners and travel and stuff eventually, but don't try to live your life too freely until you've really established yourself. That's just one of my things, and that's maybe the old school grandparents I had that kind of instilled that value in me of just patience and hard work, that nothing's going to come to you, but maybe it's just my philosophy. So hopefully that helps. Yeah, if there's any follow-up, I could help. But
well, tell us about, so you obviously you have this drive, and then I want to hear about what was your outlook when you were in high school. Were you like, okay, I'm going to go to college. I'm going to, walk us through that.
Well, that's the crazy thing. I mean, I had a goal in high school and I pretty much met that goal. I mean, that's just what it is. I mean, I told myself, I mean, in high school, I just basically was a band geek. You know, I just wanted to play my instrument and be like, I'm a euphonium player. So I wanted to be the best euphonium player, you know, and that's what everyone, they have their eye. I want to be the best trumpet player and stuff. And then you realize, you know, it's maybe not the best field unless you're really, really good. And I took military band auditions, orchestral auditions, and all that practice. So my goal in high school was just to be a professional musician. And then my band teacher said, you know, it's kind of a, you know, tough life to be a musician. Why don't you get a teaching degree too? So I got a music education degree and, you know, did the public school thing for a little bit. And that's helpful too. So that was really my dream, is to be a musician, you know, performer, teacher, all that stuff. In terms of composing, that kind of came out of the blue, and maybe that'll be another topic, you know, when we get there. But my outlook in high school was pretty similar. People used to say I was kind of an old man in high school, but now I have a house, and some of them are still living with their parents. So, and I don't mean that in a rude way. I know, because I was the poor kid. I mean, I was the middle class kid. I mean, I was the one wearing the same jeans 2-3 days in a row. I mean, and they were the ones that were judging me. And I'm not saying that the roles are reversed, but me having that mindset as a younger age is helpful. And if there's any young people listening, I know it might seem like the 4 years in high school or the 4 years in college are the longest of your life and everything's tough, but it's not. And have a goal. If you want to be the best musician, if you want to be the best chef, if you want to be the best whatever, the best soccer player, just dedicate the time, turn off the technology and hone your craft and find someone that's better, find the mentor. And I guess that was my outlook in high school. And, you know, now that I'm thinking about it, which is cool about this podcast, I didn't realize how much maybe that did influence me, because I haven't thought about it too much, is that, yeah, maybe a lot of that hard work came from these band rehearsals and these, you know, just, I mean, music just generates something in people, you know. I mean, you're a musician. I mean, musicians are just special people, that to be able to tolerate so much feedback and so many performances and so much collaboration. Maybe those formative things were cool. And if you don't have a good public school program, you know, form a band when you're kids, you know? I mean, go out and play, you know, go play in some senior centers or something. I mean, I used to play in senior centers on the weekend in high school. I mean, my friends would go and play magic cards or whatever at a turn. I'd go and make $100 playing at a senior center and get my face in the paper as a 15-year-old kid. So little things, you know, little things. I'm not going to say you have to do that, but hey, can't hurt, you know, can't hurt to start young. Yeah.
It's interesting, because you also touched upon a kind of a conventional, what's the word, dictate for musicians is like, okay, go and teach. So it's usually like music education or performance, but in a very sort of narrow field. So walk us through how, I understand you got the teaching degree and you started teaching. How did you get out of that? How did you go back into composing?
Now we're getting
composing?
Into the good. All right, cool. Now we're getting into the nitty gritty that everyone wants to know. And that's the good stuff. And it's, I should have wrote a chart or something. And yeah, the way you framed the question was very good, because I think it's very good for people to emphasize those type of degrees. Because if I just got a composing degree, I mean, I'd be screwed right now. I mean, that education degree was able to get me a decent, you know, salary job right out of high school or right out of college, you know, to at least pay for these fucking loans and everything. But it wasn't the field for me. So basically what happened, and this could be, it doesn't have to be teaching. It can be any day job that you have. And I have collaborators right now that are having day jobs, and we're actively talking and writing out numbers to say, how much do we need from music to give up your day job? So the first thing is to just make sure you have your numbers down, you know, see how much you're making in a year, see how many, you know, gigs, you know, you get. But don't really go into full time unless you really, 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 really know you're ready to do it. And we can talk about ways to know that, how to make sure your royalties are the same, you know, how to make sure you have, you know, automatic income, stuff like that. But for me, the change was, so I started the composing thing basically my last few years of college. This is when kind of, you know, these pre-Skrillex, these laptop producers started coming out. So I just had an audio engineering major friend, because I was just sick of hanging out with the classical people. So I was hanging out with all the audio engineers and all the, you know, communications majors and all the, you know, the marketing people and business people and people that I thought would, you know, yeah, you know, just be cool to hang out with. So the audio engineering major had a laptop with a software called Reason, and he was making all these beats. And I said, "Dude, do you know how to read music?" He said, "No." how are you making these beats? And I just watched him. He's dinking around on the white keys. And I said, damn, this sounds pretty good. I said, I'm a musician, and I could probably do this stuff. They're not teaching me any of this software. So we just hung out for a good couple months, and I learned the software. I basically combined the production techniques with the classical. And that kind of summer, I just experimented with score. I mean, I always liked the Harry Potter soundtracks, and you know, the soundtracks we were growing up with in the 90s, the great film score. So it was part of my vocabulary. Just as a classical musician, I just kind of looked down on the genre. I mean, many conductors would say, John Williams, that's crappy music, but I think he's the best composer that maybe has ever lived. So I knew about film score, and that summer I just kind of experimented and did some Googling, and you know, we'll talk about how to actually find jobs, but I landed like the first free film score. And then from there, it's just until now, it's just basically built up into little things. And then the full time probably happened a year after that initial gig. And to get to that level, it required a lot of kind of my niche was really TV music and reality TV and, you know, a lot of TV shows and commercials and stuff. But it started with like a free film score. And then I did, you know, a couple film scores after that. That wasn't paying well. So then I did research as a smart artist. If I wasn't being successful in one part, I tried to go to Sumber. So I was noticing that, you know, there's a couple composers that have these really nice houses and stuff, and they're writing like 10-second jingles for Fox News and stuff. And I'm saying, why am I spending 8 hours in a classroom of kids that are kind of tough to deal with sometimes when I could write one jingle that pays me that entire year's salary? I mean, that's just the thing. Like, you want to be the noble tier, you want to have your profession, but you also have to kind of, you know, utilize the world. And that's one thing I think that's cool about millennials over the past generation. The past generation would just kind of be satisfied with the job for 35 years, and that'll be fine. But I think, you know, the hustling generation, and even, you know, I think they call it Generation Z now, the next one, the hustling generation, and the only reason I know this stuff is because I'm in the advertisement world. So marketing, we always kind of follow what the generations are. So that's why I refer to them like that. But it seems like this generation is much more interested in hustling and finding ways to have automatic and finding ways to work for themselves. And I'm glad I had that mindset. And I was able to move out of the job basically a year after I got my first kind of free gig. And hopefully that answers it. And we could kind of maybe narrow it down more from there. Because now I think we're kind of getting into the stuff that everyone wants to know. And the cool thing about me is there's really no secret. There's no connection. It's not like my girlfriend's dad or my wife's dad was a producer. I mean, I was a nobody that had a very clear path that's very easy for everybody listening to get to where I am. And I could give you every step, and everybody can do it. But it's going to take what I talked about before, grit. And it's also going to take something that I haven't talked a lot about, and that's really good music. So
tell me about, how did you learn the software? Was it, were you self-taught? And what did you use? Did you use Pro Tools? Did you use, like, what, tell us about that.
Yeah, so in terms of my favorite software is really the pen and the paper, and I still go outside and write pads and paper. So that, I mean, the classical training, I learned how to compose music, which was cool. The production, this friend that I told you about, and he taught me everything. And we were just good buddies, and we would just hang out with a laptop, and he would show, and that's the one big recommendation I give on all these talks and podcasts is you got to find a mentor. You have to find someone that's better than you, because all musicians tend to be, I mean, they're artists. They care about their art, so they're very sensitive. They tend to be a little overconfident about their work. So to have someone that will be honest and tell you your work sucks is very good. And for to someone that is a little more experienced, that could tell you how to get there, or someone that can give you a 50% co-write or give you a ghostwriting thing, or just find someone that could help you. But he was better than me, and he helped me. So we just would sit, you know, and maybe instead of partying for the weekend, we did a lot of that, but we would, you know, maybe just hang out on the laptop. And I would ask really good questions. I would shut up and listen, and I wouldn't interrupt him. And he would, you know, I gave him the respect he deserved. And, you know, I think he liked that because he was a hip hop person, and he appreciated that I came to him and respected him. And we had a great team, and it just worked out. Now we're like best of friends, but he was, you know, getting picked on a lot. And basically, you know, people said, you know, why the hell are you making that crappy street music? And you can kind of get where I'm going. And he would get, you know, very judged for things like that, but I would hang out with him and respected him. And now we're still best friends. So I treated him with respect, and he taught me everything. So, and that's another thing with musicians. Everybody's equal. Color, gender, everything's equal. You respect each other. Treat everybody with respect. Don't talk down to everybody, and things will really work out for you. Because people that tend to be nice to me and stuff on emails, you know, I put them on to things and give them co-writes. But people that, you know, talk back and don't appreciate it doesn't work. So this guy was so receptive, and he sat down as equals, and he just taught me everything. And it was great. And the software was called Reason. Reason 5. So I did work in Reason 5 for a while, and he taught me everything. And then I, after, you know, he was a year under me, and he graduated, and now he's a great political activist down in Washington, D.C., organizing a lot of these big protests and stuff. So he's just and he's really just doing great. He's not doing music, you know, at the moment, but we still stay in touch. So after he left, I kind of hooked up with another guy who was a little more serious about specifically film and TV. He was more of a beat maker and stuff like that, which is, I'm totally glad I learned that, because, you know, I'm really glad I learned those things. I linked up with a score guy, and he was using Logic Pro. He was up in Boston, so we hung out, and, you know, that was, I guess we're looking at like 2013 now. So, and, you know, after that, I started realizing that I started maybe becoming a little better than a teacher. So that's when I moved off on my own, and I'm still using Logic mainly, but I also use Pro Tools for big sessions and stuff. But mostly self-taught. I would never take a production class, or I would never sit on YouTube. I mean, maybe YouTube tutorials once in a while, but sometimes if you learn how to do a software, you type in the tutorial, you instantly get on Google for 2-hour videos. It gives you a certain thing in your head that makes it seem hard. So I would just say, just fuck around with the software yourself. You know, find a few YouTube videos, find someone that can help you, but don't be afraid to teach yourself. So yeah, I taught myself, and I had a really cool friend that I respected enough to appreciate him. And so just respect, find someone. Man, that was a long answer, because I love that guy and I owe everything to him. And this is the coolest podcast I've ever done, because I never think about these things. Everyone talks about how do you compose it, and it's the same, but this is really cool to think about these things. And I appreciate the questions, because it's making me happy to think about these people and my past and stuff.
Well, I want to ask, how did you find the other guys? How'd you find the guy in Boston?
Oh yeah. Yeah. That's a great question. Yeah. And you know, sorry, that's the Northeast in me. I say guys, and I really mean all. And that's in my last podcast. I was always saying this person's a classical guy. And what I mean is like, it's like a general term. Sorry. So this was actually a young lady, and I think it was Facebook. I had a personal Facebook at that time, and there were a lot of composer groups and stuff. And I would recommend people use those. They're great. And I think I just typed in, hey, anybody in the Northeast, they want to, or it might've been a mutual friend. No, this one was a Facebook connection. Yeah. I just said, you know, I know everyone's in LA. If there's anyone in the Northeast, particularly Connecticut, like I said, I'm pretty close to New York. I don't really like going to New York, but this person was in Boston. So we just did some remote stuff, and I linked up, and maybe we had a slight romantic relationship for a while, but you know, it kind of just worked out like that. She helped me out quite a bit with the production. And then, like I said, after that, you know, I just went off on my own. But yeah, you should connect on Facebook and Twitter, and you got to have a community. You know, you got to have some people that you could send tracks to, you know, to get feedback and stuff. So you could find them anywhere. I'm not hip on Facebook too much anymore, but I'm sure there's groups.
Yeah. I think that's a really important point, because I think too, well, first of all, I love that you're talking about, you know, building relationships, and also that you can find so many resources and support online, and don't go for the shiniest object in the room. I think a lot of people, they're like, I want to connect with Pharrell. I want Pharrell to hear my, it's like, no, start.
That's the big thing that these kids now have to learn. I mean, seriously, sorry to interrupt you, but I mean, you were going off on a great thing that I'm very passionate about, working your way up. Because I had to work my fucking way up. I had no help.
Yeah.
I was writing for free. I was making so many bad deals, and people were stealing my writer's share. And I advise people to just watch the deals, but also you have to work, and you know the music industry. You got to work up. I mean, you got to get people's coffee. And I still, as a full time composer, that's, I guess, moderately to highly successful, I still work for other people, and I still get people's coffee. I mean, there's a very big millionaire composer in New York that he's like one of the old composers from the 70s, and he's very successful, and he does theater and stuff. And I'm able to do some work for him, but I'm still going to go get his coffee. I'm not going to walk in as an equal, even though I have 40 TV shows. I'm not going to walk in as an equal. And I think he likes that. So just always, you're always going to be someone's bitch, and you're always going to be someone's boss. I mean, even my clients have a boss. Their client has a boss. I mean, you're always going to be, so don't be afraid, young people, to be someone's bitch, because I'd rather be getting Hans Zimmer's coffee and working for free than working for the local symphony and, you know, getting my big picture in the program, you know, just because I have the artistic arrogance, you know? So it's happening a lot, and that's the only reason why I mention it, is just I wish some of these composers would just work with me and get you know, some great placements instead of trying to be so artistically arrogant and, you know, stuff like that. So, you know, we could talk more about that if you want, but I think that's, I've beaten that one in pretty strong.
Well, I think, and I think that's great.
In my industry, at least, it's very important, I should say.
Yeah, no, niche. I think, no. Well, and that's what we're talking about today, so that's perfect. But I think the other point I wanted to make is that there are so many invaluable people that are accessible and supportive that you don't have to go for the top tier. You can go for tomorrow's Hans Zimmer. You can go for tomorrow's Pharrell. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get to the people that are more accessible now that are going to respond to you, that are willing to help you out, are willing to give you some advice. Again, I totally agree. It's like, be humble. But I think, like I said, it's like there are so many innumerable resources, especially online, that you can connect with. That, again, it's not going to be the top tier level, but they could be tomorrow.
No, that's right. I wish I had a piano patch opener so I'd play a big chord, because that's maybe the best little concise statement from the whole podcast. That's great. Because right now, there's a thing, in my term I call it, is the middle class of musicians is very strong, especially in composing. I mean, there really sometimes wasn't a middle class of musician. There was just amateurs and then the big pros that got all the work, at least in my niche of film scores and stuff. I mean, all the Hollywood guys got all the time. But now, there's so many of what you're talking about, these next gen, these middle class musicians that are just, you know, living and, you know, that kind of, maybe they're not famous, but there's a ton of library music composers, a ton of little reality composers, a ton of session musicians, a ton of middle class musicians that probably work with the big guys. So that is a great recommendation. And that's one of the reasons why I kind of got linked up with some of the sports shows, is because the one notable composer in Connecticut, actually there's two very well-known composers in Connecticut, I Googled them and I linked up with them, and it really worked out, and I was their bitch for a good 4 years, but now I'm working with them on some big like HBO projects and stuff, so it's really, really good. So I would just, wherever state you're at, there's probably some composer living there, or some, you know, big musician or some session musician, link up with them. Why not? Because they're probably like me, lonely, and they're probably like me, that, you know, it's just nice to see people in the studio, nice to talk with someone, you know, online, or nice to link up with someone. So yeah, that's what I call the middle class musician, which I think is really taking over. As before the show, we were talking about kind of the way the industry is now. I think it's going to be 2019 and beyond, it's going to be that the middle class is going to be the next kind of goal, because no one can reach where these big wigs are, because they have a kind of spider web, you know, and they have a certain control, and their children get their jobs after, and their family gets it. So there's no chance for a lot of composers, at least. I mean, you could maybe be the next Pharrell if you're good, but there's not a lot of chance for a lot of composers now, unless you have a certain connection to get the next Hollywood film. So at least what I'm doing, I'm finding a lot more people that are satisfied with the middle class musician, and I think that's going to be a real new goalpost, and I think listeners should really have more of a realistic goal for that, is to really try to strive for the middle class. Just try to be, you know, part-time for a little bit, and then try to full-time, and then, hey, if you want to go for the big leagues, go ahead, but you're going to have to move to LA or New York to get the big artist things, in my opinion. Or if you're trying to be the big composer, then you're going to have to be LA. But if you want to be middle class, like I'm doing and you're doing, everyone's doing, and it just be kind of getting by and everyone's just kind of being fine, then that's, you can be wherever the hell you want and make it work. But find someone.
That's a great point. Why don't you talk a little bit more about that? Because we talked about before the podcast about, I was saying, I think in so many words, Rome is burning. LA, they are still obviously where you need to be in a lot of cases, but I don't think that that's going to be forever. So talk about that, though. Talk about how you are able to be a successful composer in Connecticut and not in LA.
Yeah. So, you know, that I can answer the question two ways, because I'm very close proximity to some major cities. I'm basically an hour from New York. So when I need to, I'm about an hour from Boston, too. So when I need to, I tell people I'm from New York. When I need to, I tell them I'm from Connecticut. So in certain aspects, it is very beneficial for me to be near New York. When you get to a certain level, location's important. But for the most part, location does not matter. I mean, for me, now that I have some credits and I need to make face-to-face meetings, and I can make, and a lot of big deals are mostly made face-to-face. That's good for me to go to New York or go to LA and if you're, you know, have the funds to do it, you should go to some of these conferences. But overall, until you're at a point where you need to do that, you don't need to, just be wherever you're at. And it's just about emailing, and that's really it.
Yeah, that's a great point. And now let's talk about, you were mentioning business savvy and how important that is. I mean, basically, as an independent musician, you have to be an entrepreneur, right?
Yeah, I mean, legally and everything. I mean, we are just basic. We're small. I mean, we're businesses. And that's why the part of the hardest thing, I was kind of preparing for the question of, like, how did you get your job? Because, and that's the thing, is that it's not really a job. I mean, it's like, if you go to your local gas station owner who's working there 7 days, or he has to work and run the place themselves, and you go to ask, or your local chef, or your local entrepreneur, and say, you know, when did you get your job? They're gonna kind of have the same confused response, because yeah, it's not. I mean, it's a business. They'll say, I started my business here, and legally, it is a bit. I mean, as a composer, at what I'm doing, I pay people, I get stuff in, I have to do 1099s. Yeah, we are little factories, and the composer is always the one that's always on time, that meets the deadlines, that organizes the team. I'm sorry I was a little late to the podcast, but usually the composer is not the one that's late. The musicians are late. The musicians are flaky. The musicians will cancel. The musicians will be hungover for the gig. But the composer has to have all the musicians won't do their taxes. The composer has to do their taxes. The composer has to do their contracts, their paperwork. You have to know all this stuff, your writers, your publisher, because you are, if you're a composer that's making money, you are legally a business. You are a sole proprietorship. You are a DBA, if you want. I mean, you have to act like a business. And there's a savviness that has to come. And it's not just for music. If you, like I said, ask the gas station owner, ask the landscaping company, there's all certain things that every business owner has to do. How do you track your expenses? Okay. How do you find your clients? How do you market? Okay. If you're failing, are you going to blame the world? No, the rent's coming in. So the gas station is not going to blame the world. He's going to change something. If your music sounds like shit, are you going to blame the fee? Or are you going to change something? So you have to have that business savvy, and it's completely extra musical. And most of the people I work with are not successful because they I mean, good music is very important. I say it's 80%, I would say, good music, but the 20% that's very important is the business savviness. And it's just a lot of artists I'm working with are not having it. Even just things like naming files. Like, think about the gas station guy again. I mean, how does he, you know, what kind of tags does he use? What kind of text? All these things you have to think about. I mean, what color is the carpet, you know, when you walk in? I mean, how are you plowing the snow? You know, how are you organizing your I mean, all these things are what business owners have to think of. And that's what we are. Even though it's maybe a 1 or 2, 3 person operation, we're business owners. So
how did you learn that? Was that, did you do like reverse engineering?
Man.
Yeah. Tell
us
about that.
I had to go to tax court a couple of times, I'll tell you, because I was a dumb kid that didn't know it. So to be honest, I really should have, because I'm so glad we're talking about this stuff. Holy shit, I have not thought about this stuff for so long. You are a great interviewer. You are a really great interviewer. Seriously, wow, this is cool to think about, because it's so important, and I didn't really realize how much of these things I'm talking about really influenced me. And yeah, no, I did some really stupid things in the beginning, and because I was naive and I didn't have a mentor, and I had a lot of the things I'm criticizing about these things that I'm talking about, how artists aren't, you know, patient. That was me. I mean, I'm not judging other people. I'm saying it from experience, because all of these points, I was the arrogant guy that thought my music was great. I was the guy that interrupted. I mean, I was the guy that made the bad deals. So I'm speaking from a place of authority on that, because I did it, not because I'm going to bash other people that are doing it. And it is in their general trends, because I mean, I did it. So I made a lot of bad deals, and I didn't keep track of my taxes well. So I had to learn by fire, and just basically after I luckily got the lawyer to take care of the it was just a matter of reporting the income. Cause I, my first big job, you know, big, you know, 5-figure job came in. I thought it was, you know, the big shot in town, and then you have to, you know, do your taxes and your expenses. And that went real quick. So right. I was really stupid about it. And, you know, it took me a good year to deal with the IRS and stuff. So in terms of the learning the business stuff, it was, you know, a lot of Google, a lot of books. I have a lawyer. I use the QuickBooks. The new QuickBooks Self-Employed app is so good. It is so good. I used to have to keep my expenses in like a Google Sheet or Excel. Just download the QuickBooks app. It links right up with your PayPal and your debit card, and it automatically categorizes all these fake meals that you have. have to write off. Oh, shit. Did I just say that? No. Sorry. All these business meals. No, but it automatically does that for you. Ever since I've downloaded QuickBooks and I've had a lawyer do my contracts, that's been very good. But until then, you just got to read articles, ask people, listen to the lawyer on your podcast, I'd say. But don't be too heavy-handed. Ask for help. Even right now, when I have big deals, I have a broker that handles it, and he takes whatever his percentage, because I just hand some business things we have to do, but some things as musicians, you got to, you know, throw the hands up when you got a 300-page contract for, you know, Super Bowl commercial or something like that. But for me, it was trial by fire, man, and that tax credit, that was scary, but it also made me realize, yeah, this is legit, and that maybe, yeah, I'm running a business. I got to do this the right way. And, you know, gas stations, restaurants close down all the time. It's not the world's fault. So we are, I mean, this is a high risk, high reward. So maybe as we turn into the next thing, my next thought was, as a business owner, how do I have automatic income? Because these gas station owners, some of them have 2-3 gas stations. Some of them have an apartment on the side that has rent. Some of them has little houses, you know, and these are all mostly immigrants. They're smart, hardworking people. I mean, you have to have that innovation. That's why the immigrant communities are so amazing.
Sorry, I'm being dive bombed by Charlie. Woo! The Snoopy, the Red Baron.
There we go. That's God telling me not to talk about it. No, I was about to say that, and that must be like the Trump government coming, because I was just making a pro-immigrant in the comment. No, I was saying that these immigrant communities that, in my area at least, that run these gas stations are so entrepreneurial and so strong, because they don't have a preconceived mindset that everything's going to come to me on a silver platter. Because like my in-laws came in as immigrants with nothing, 20 cents in their pocket, and now they have the biggest hotel in town, biggest hotel, and it started with one gas station, and they partnered with people. They didn't have any money, but they had a person give them a loan, and then one gas station turned into two. Two turned into three. Three turned into a restaurant. So those are the kind of innovative things you have to have as a business owner, composer, is when you fail, or when I had that tax court thing happen, it made me realize, bam, I have to change things, and I have to also have automatic income. So what that whole point was is that a lot of these smart entrepreneurs that run, and these you know, really strong generations these immigrant families that came in one generation, they're millionaires now, is because they have automatic income, as they have not one gas station. They're not just working for one music client. They have two or three. And they also have an apartment building or something that has rent. And for me, that's royalties. That's my BMI or ASCAP that comes every 3 months. So as an artist, you have to balance where your money's coming from. What accounts do you have? Because some of these people won't pay you for 6 months, but some gigs you'll get paid the next week, or some gigs you'll get paid in 3 months. So those things, as a business owner, you have to think about what income is automatic. How do I get that kind of income? Hopefully we can talk about that. But that's kind of my philosophy on the business thing, is I always bring up a gas station owner in a lot of these. And I always think of myself as that kind of person. Yeah. Because in terms of cost and expenses, pretty much what I'm doing is the same budget as a gas station. And if you want to look that up, you can see.
That's cool. Yeah. Well, we are running short on time, but I wanted to ask one more question about marketing and how do you get new clients? How do you stand out? And like you were saying, there's so many composers, and there's a ton of content, but there's also a ton of composers that want to get that content. So how do you stand out?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of composers. There's a lot of crap composers. I mean, just to be honest. So I think there is. I wouldn't let people get intimidated by the numbers, because the top 1% is always going to be there, because they know how to do the right things. And it's just, in terms of marketing, that is the most important thing. It's because a lot of these, and after this podcast, I'm going to get maybe 100 emails. And the last one, I had 250 emails, and I only replied to two, because only two people wrote the email properly, and only two people marketed themselves properly. And I can't give you a real be-all, end-all answer to this, but you guys can check my website and stuff like that, and just to see how I package things. But it's just, in terms of finding clients, is like I talked about before, write an email that's professional. It's short. I don't need to know your whole life story. I'm sure that auntie's in the hospital and stuff, and you need to, and it's a tough time, but it's not going to pull my heartstrings and make me help you out. Don't tell me about these things. Don't say, and this is the one thing that these hip-hop producers got to stop, don't say that, let me actually pull up the email, because some of these people say, if we work together, we're going to make tons of money. Like if we're work together, it's going to be really good. But I don't want to waste your time. But they say things like that, and that's an instant delete. So in terms of marketing and finding new clients, like I said before in the beginning, I would sometimes spend 8 hours with demos, so sending demos. Sometimes you just have to get a good reel, get a good package, do some Googling, join the music library report if you're like library, and just send out. Look up some publishers, send them out very short 1 to 2 paragraph email, no jokes, no smileys, no bullshit, straight to the point. Don't tell them the instruments. Like some of these things give really bad advice. I've been noticing that a lot of these library guys are sending tracks with like their BMI number in it, and they're doing these silly things. And I'm like, where are you guys getting this advice from? Because I think some of these ebook people are not actually people that are in the industry. They just want to sell the ebook. So they're selling a lot of stupid advice. So some of the advice that is given, and people don't listen to this, is people are saying to like describe your tracks in like they say, attach, or here's a link with a track, and in 1 minute in, it has a great drum beat, and I recorded the trumpet. You don't have to type that. And some notable ebooks are recommending that, and it's bad advice. So just a basic email. Don't describe the track. Just give me the link, or give whatever client you're trying to find the link. But the big question of finding clients, finding who are the buyers, who pays the bills, who are the money. That's my thing. That's why I found who pays the most for music. Who pays? I mean, who is going to shell out $15,000 to $20,000 for a 30-second song? Ad agencies. Okay, who's gonna pay $300,000 for a cover song? Okay, Super Bowl commercial. I mean, who's going to pay in the thousands? I mean, that's what you find those people. I'm not going to give you the answer. Not now, you, but the people listening. I'm not going to give you the answer. Find the people that have the budget and look at what they're producing. If your music is at their level, then present them a reel. And if they like you, they will respond like within a day or two. I mean, they will respond. Don't let the numbers intimidate you, because there's a lot of good people. I mean, there's a lot of people. There's just a lot of bad music. So they will respond. And if they don't respond, don't nag them. It probably has to do with your music, and try the next one. That would be my last kind of parting thing. But that marketing thing is very important. And a lot of these companies do remember you. And if you send a bad reel or a bad email, they're going to remember you. So it could come back to bite you if you're not ready. Don't BCC people. Don't mass email. Don't use the MailChimp. I did like 200 submissions last week. I try to do a couple every week, and they're all one at a time. So, last parting words. Hopefully that was helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of absolutely really cool discussion. Yeah, you could talk about cool stuff I haven't talked about. It's just nice.
Yeah.
Refreshing.
Well, tell our listeners how they can find you, how they can follow you.
Yeah.
All that good stuff.
Absolutely. So I just got back on Facebook, because I learned a few little advertisement promotion tricks to get some new clients. And so I do have a Facebook page now. You can look up John Del Vento, which is just starting. That's kind of a couple hundred likes now, which is fun. Hopefully I'll get to your level soon with the likes and stuff. But facebook.com/ what the hell is it called? John Del Vento Music. My Twitter is a little more busy. I've had that since 2012. So that has its own little community there. I talk to, a little politics here, a little Game of Thrones here. So you could Twitter/ Del Vento Time. That's my Twitter. And I'm on SoundCloud, where you could hear a bunch of the music. But my main website, and guys, if you have a website, just put all the links there. My main website has all this, johndelvento.net. Would love to hear from any artists. And, don't be afraid to email and just say hi first. Don't always like try to get a piece of the pie right in the first email. Don't try to like submit. Just say, hey, John, it's cool. How's it going? I hear you like Game of Thrones, and then that's sometimes BSing that way is the easier way to get in. So if you guys want to hit me up, I love to talk with you or listen to your music. We have an urgent need for singer-songwriter songs right now for some major jobs. If anybody is interested in collaborating, we have about 40 TV shows every week that are regularly asking for music. If you're any composers that are trying to get into TV, I recommend you, send me some emails. The last podcast I was on, I got about 250 emails, and two people that I put on are now pitching for some very major things. So if anybody's really interested or having an artistic rut, I know how you feel. So feel free to send a message at johndelvento.net, and I'd love to help anyone out. Good luck. Keep at it. Keep following this awesome podcast, and don't waste too much time listening to how other people have done their things. That's good to do once in a while, but just turn it off and then get to work is a good thing.
Yeah,
I think a lot of the kids these days like to sit and watch people playing video games. They don't actually like to play the video game, or they like to watch studio tours and stuff, or watch production to just do it.
Yeah, love it. That was awesome. Thank you so much, John. I appreciate you.
I appreciate you. You are awesome. So good luck with everything. And did I swear what? Did I swear twice, right? I swear twice, maybe? All right. Are you going to bleep it out?
No.
My special thanks to John Del Vento. He is such a character. And I've had many people swear a lot more than him, so we're all doing really good. Anyway, you can find John at johndelvento.net, johndelvento. He is on, as he said, Facebook and Twitter. You can tweet at him about Game of Thrones. Also, he actually does some YouTube Q&A, so that's another way to reach out to him and ask him, you know, especially if you want to get into the film composing business. You know, he's very accessible, really willing to help out and support all y'all starting out. So again, special thanks to John for taking the time to be on Hey, How'd You Get That Music Job? Now, I'm your host, L. Ariel, and we are on social media at Music Jobs Podcast, or you can follow me on the IG and the Twitter and the Facebook at L-A-R-I-E-L Music, or my website is L-A-R-I-E-L-Music.com. That's L-A-R-I-E-L-Music.com. And another week, my loves. Wow, we are just kicking butt and taking names. It's already February, mid to late February. So just keep on chugging. What are we going to do? We are going to keep on hustling, pursue that dream, and don't you give up.